Hello and welcome to a response of the day for the 12th of Adar. Today we're going to see a response of the Tzitzili Ezer from Chelek Chof Bet Simon Lamedchet from the 22nd volume. Response number 38, it's dated the 12th of Adar of Tov Shin Nun Vav of 1996. When the Tzitzili Ezer was just about 80 years old, maybe just 79 if he wrote it earlier in the year. Yeah, but probably 79 and a half years old. And yet he is, you know, still firmly in the saddle, as it were, in terms of writing Tshuvot and discussing Torah issues. Let's start by thanking the OU, Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz and David Hochhauser, for their assistance with making these shiurim available to you. And then let's jump right in. His question is, do Nashim have to hear, do women have to hear Parashat Zachor? They're required to hear Parashat Zachor. Now, I think this is an example of a response that called out to me because it tapped into an issue that I thought about for a long time because, and this is me editorializing a little bit, let's be clear about that, because whether or not women are obligated in Zachor, and we'll get to that, and we won't get to whether men are obligated in Zachor, though we think about it, so we're just going to take for granted that there's an obligation for men to hear Zachor read from a Torah. That's not as clear as you might think, but we're not going to get into that today. But if women, even if women are obligated, for Zachor gets this attention that has long bothered me, only because of its dissonance, it's not fitting into the attention that they give, that we give, that people give, to obligations that are at least as important in any reading of halacha. So there'll be these extra Zohar readings, right, after shul, before mincha, whatever it is. So it's an example of paying attention to something and giving enthusiasm for and adopting a practice that often, to my mind, skews the halakhic system. That's my own thing. That won't come up in the tshuva at all, the response at all. It's just an explanation of why this might be an example, even though part of the point of this series was to find tshuvot randomly, as it were, by adopting a completely arbitrary, seemingly arbitrary choice of how to select them, which is that they fit on a certain day of the calendar. But in this particular instance, I think it's very clear that I have a personal interest in what the tzitzis is about to say. He's responding to a man who had, I'm sorry, we'll get to what he's responding to in a second, but he points out, nobody mentions whether they do or don't really, in terms of reading Zachor. At the end, we'll see that some people talk about it a little bit, but in terms of paskening it, it's not in the Shulchan Aruch, it's not in the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, it's not in the Chayei Adam, which is like the updated Shulchan Aruch of the 19th century. It got superseded, as it were, by the Mishneh Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan, but they also don't talk about it, or the Kaf HaKayim. So in other words, he's looking through all of these halacha books, and the halacha books are not telling him whether or not women are obligated in Zachor. So there's a sefer called Torat Chesed, which we actually, I think, saw in the tshuva that I happened to have taped yesterday, which was for the 6th of Adar, and referred to the Gaon Milublin, and this is this Rav Shmuel Friedkin, who was the author of the Torat Chesed. He lived from like 1830 to 1902, and the sefer was published, the first volume of the sefer was published in 1880-something. So there in the Torah Chesed, he says he thinks that women are not obligated to hear Zachor from a Sefer Torah at all. And he says, and that's the minhag. The minhag of the custom is that we don't make women hear Sefer this, and therefore, well, we never heard anybody who requires women to hear it, and therefore, there was a rabbi who was asking him the question, and the rabbi asked the question was, of course they should be chayavot, they should be obligated to hear it. So this rabbi of Lublin, this Torah Chesed, says to this guy, why are you making problems? It's such an opposite of what you can imagine happening today, right? If today somebody were to get up and say, I don't think women are obligated at all, you could easily imagine somebody saying to them, you know what, this is what women do, it's a mitzvah they're trying to do, what's the big deal? So stop it, don't make a fuss about it. So the Torah Chesed actually responded almost the exact reverse, in the reverse situation, where he was in Lublin, and in the world in which he grew up, no women were involved in it, and they didn't bother to come, they didn't make a point of coming. So let the Jewish people have their custom, right? That phrase, let the Jewish people have their custom, now is one that just this example shows us can be taken either way. If the custom you see is that women do something, you say, let them have their custom and don't stop them. If the custom is they don't do something, you can imagine somebody saying, don't stop them. That's what the Torah Chesed said. But around the same time, the Binyan Tzion, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, I should correct myself, that's a little bit of an exaggeration, the Binyan Tzion was actually earlier than the Torah Chesed, Rav Shlomo Friedkin from Lublin. The Binyan Tzion was born a few years earlier, and he was born about 30 years earlier, and passed away about 30 years earlier, so he lived around the same amount of time, but the Binyan Tzion came first, and the Binyan Tzion wrote the exact opposite. He says, I received tradition from the Rav of Wurzburg, That's the origin of the name Würzburg, is that you're from Würzburg. And he quoted, this Rav of Würzburg quoted his Rebbe, Rav Nosson Adler. Now, Rav Nosson Adler was also the Rebbe of the Chatam Sofer. Rav Nosson Adler is an important Rav, who was the Rebbe of many important Rabbanim, but I don't think left a lot in writing, which, well, we don't know so much about him, but he was an important figure in German-Hungarian Jewry, and he quoted, for this Würzburg Rav, is being quoted by the Binyan Sion, as have quoted the Rav Nosson Adler, that women are obligated. And he was very strict about it, this was Dustin Adler, and apparently made his misharet, his household help, who were women, Jewish women, he made them come to hear it. And so too the Würzburger did it, and so too the Binyan Sion says that's a good idea. And he thinks the reason is that the obligation of Zohar, she'inah mitzvah taseh shasman grama, it's not all that differentiates men from women in halacha is that women have this category of obligations that they're not required to fulfill, and those are called the mitzvot aseh shasman grama, positive commandments, obligatory of obligations that don't have a time component to them. So if we don't know the answer to whether women, if we don't know of a reason that women are exempt from something, that women shouldn't have to do something, the fundamental halachic tool of investigation is to say, is this the mitzvah of Shei Shazman Grama? Does it have a time component, this obligation? And the Binyan Tzion says it doesn't here, because there is no obligation about when one reads Zohar. Truth is, not that we pass in this way, the Sefer Kinuch doesn't even seem to be sure that it has to be every year, but certainly, there's no particular requirement of when it has to be done. And therefore, and the Magen Avraham says that, and the Magen Avraham says just anytime once a year that's good enough. And therefore, it's like any other mitzvah to say. It's another obligation, and usually women are obligated in obligations. They're Jews just like anybody else. So that's why the Binyan Tzion thinks that women should have to say Zohar. And then the Tzitzit Yezra says, if you look at that Binyan Tzion, you'll see that he talks about the opinion of the Sefer HaChinuch and Tav Reish Gimel. So the Sefer HaChinuch and Tav Reish Gimel says that the mitzvah, the obligation to wipe out Amalek, we'll see it a little below, because I'm going to step outside my usual practices, because it's a short tshuva. So on other days when I have short tshuvot, I either stop a little early, or I find another tshuva. But today I wanted to get into this issue, because I think it's a really interesting issue of its own, so I brought a few of the sources that it is referring to. So I'll get back to Sefer HaChinuch. Sefer HaChinuch, that Binyan Tzion is quoting, says that the war really should fundamentally happen with men and not women, and that's why you'd think men might be more obligated, at least in the war. The Sefer Tzitz HaKodesh says that if you're going to follow the logic of the Sefer HaChinuch, you say, though, that women would be chayav in Parsha Zachar, in reading Zachar, with the Tzibor, because they're generally part of Milchamot HaTzibur. When you have a public war, an obligatory war, women partake not by fighting, but by guarding the kelim, by taking care of things in the back, you know, by supplying the soldiers and things like that. And therefore, there would be reason for them to read Zohar as well. Now, that Tzitz HaKodesh, which Tzitz is not going to make a big deal about it, but he just made a huge jump. What he seemed to assume is that the only reason why one would be obligated to read Zohar is if one is obligated to be part of what Zohar is about, which is the wiping out of Amalek. So he's finding a way to say that women are in fact part of such wars in halacha, but in searching for that, he's making clear that it's not enough to say, well, it's not a mitzvah seh shazman grama, it's not an obligation with a time component to it, because he's just taken that other jump and said, no, this is a mitzvah that's sort of an adjunct mitzvah to another mitzvah. So we'll get into that a little bit below. Another support for the idea that women might or may not be obligated in the mitzvah, and this is going to go the other way. Until now, we've been saying ways to think that they should be obligated in reading Zohar. But of course, if Zohar is part of the war, if reading Zohar is part of supporting the war effort, then you'd have to say that women have to be part of the war effort as well, and that's not clear at all. The Chinuch thought that they wouldn't be part of the war effort, and therefore the obligation of at least the war doesn't apply to them, whether or not the obligation of the reading applies to them. And then the Tzitz HaKodesh should say, no, maybe they would be part of the war because it's a public war. But the Tzitz HaKodesh also says he heard from in the name of another sefer, the Zayir Anan, who quoted a rush. Now, there's a story in the Gemara and Brachot, which is not directly about Zohar at all. So the Gemara and Brachot is about freeing slaves for what purposes and who can count it. It's really about who can count in a minyan. And there was a suggestion, and this suggestion becomes, you know, part of halachic lore, that if you have a child and he holds a chumash, and this is the Gemara that we're talking about. It's Gemara about making a minyan. What you can do, you don't have a minyan in cases of extremists, of you don't have a minyan, you want a minyan. So the story there is that Rabbi Eliezer freed a slave. He had a non-Jewish slave who was partially converted to Judaism for the purpose of being a slave, and he got to a place where there was no minyan. This is what the story in the Gemara is. So he freed his slave to make the minyan. Now, what happens to the Gemara there says that they're actually lacking two for a minyan, and he freed his slave to make nine for a minyan. But the question is, what would be the circumstance that having a minyan would be so important that it would outweigh the apparently Torah obligation there, and that's not our topic today, but apparently the Torah obligation there is assumed to be that you don't free slaves unless there's some real reason. So if you just say, well, they wanted to fill davening b'tzibur, praying as a community, that would seem to be a rabbinic requirement. And it would seem like, now, all of this seems like are things that if you were in that sugya, you could talk about. I'm only trying to explain where the Rush gets to, how the Rush gets to the idea that he's about to say, but it would seem like if you want to do something in public together as a community, and the thing you're going to do in public together is a rabbinic obligation, that it's not so clear that that would allow, especially since it takes an action here, and we generally say that Chazal don't tell us in general to violate things in the Torah, bekum v'aseh. So it would seem like you'd want to have some kind of a biblical obligation that would be worth, make it worth our halachic while, or worth Rabbi Eliezer's halachic while, to free his slave in violation of what he assumed to be a biblical obligation. Right, you want to get a minyan. So the Rush suggested, right, it was for reading Parshat Zachar. Meaning, if you assume, as the Tosafist tradition did, that the reading of Parshat Zachar actually means reading it. When the Torah says, Zachar, et asher asah lecha Amalek, we have to remember what Amalek did to us. One could have imagined, and it seems like the Rambam and the Sefer Chinuch imagined it this way, one could have imagined that the obligation is only to remember it, to talk about it, to think about it. We'll see the Rambam's formulation in a few minutes. So that would not have required a public Torah reading. The Tosafist tradition was that, no, it meant a public Torah reading. This is an obligation. There's reasons why Tosafist thinks that are in the sigils of the Gemara that are not our issue. There are Gemaras that refer to obligations to read something midoraita from the Torah, and Tosafist doesn't know what are Torah obligations to read things out loud and in public. So this would be a good example of it. If this is a good example of it, then the Rush could say they had all gathered to read Zachar. They didn't have a minyan. He wanted to get a minyan to read Zachar, so he freed his slave. Now, the Zayat Ranan says, okay, that's what the Rush says. Now, I have to say, that Rush is interesting to think about because, as we've just said, the reading of Zohar is a mitzvah daseh, shalom hazman grama. It doesn't have a particular time that needs to be done. You could have imagined somebody saying to the Rush, what are you talking about? Why would Eliezer free his slave? Why wouldn't he just wait for another time when there was a minyan? Now, possibly the Rush could argue either a year was about to pass, it had been so long, this is when they planned to do it, a year was about to pass, they didn't want to let the year pass. Or perhaps you could argue that what it takes to be allowed to free a slave in seeming violation of whatever it is the Torah required, when the Torah said that you should bequeath these slaves to your children after you, whatever that meant, that whatever that standard is, it can be outdone by the desire to fulfill a mitzvah, not by the absolute necessity to fulfill a mitzvah. So the Rush could say, as long as they got together, they want to read Zachar. If, as long as we understand that reading Zachar in public is a biblical commandment, that could be enough to outweigh the Vahit Nachatam. That's the Rush's point. But the Zayir Ranan went on and said, but that's got to be then. The Rush must have assumed, this is an interesting claim to make, the Rush must have assumed that women are not obligated. Why would the Rush assume that women must have assumed that women are obligated? Because if women are obligated, says the Zayat Ranan, then slaves should be obligated. Because let's remember that slaves in halacha, once they've been partially converted with the person being slaves, are achayev in many, many, many mitzvot. And the general standard, there are some exceptions, but the general standard is that slaves have the same obligations to mitzvot as women do, not because there's any parallel among them in terms of our perspective of them. There may be parallels in terms of the freedom of their time, but no more than that. So there's no parallels there that we're trying to make, but that's the standard halacha. So the Zayir Ranan said, so if women are obligated, slaves would be obligated. If slaves would be obligated, Rabbi Eliezer didn't have to free the slave to get it to a minyan. So the Tzitzit Kodesh says that's not valid reasoning. It doesn't prove anything because it could be that women's obligation in the war, even if we say they're obligated, maybe we'll say women are obligated to join the war against Amalek, and therefore they're obligated in the reading of Zachor because they're now part of the whole experience. But the Tzitzit Kodesh takes for granted that whatever their obligation is, that obligation is going to be when men are there. that you'd need a group of men because the men would clearly be fighting the war. So therefore, it would have to be true, says the Sekodesh, that when it comes to the mitzvah of Zechira, because the mitzvah of Zechira, of remembering what Amalek did, is very clearly ancillary and sort of attached to the obligation to fight the war. So if the men have to be there for that, then the women only there and when there are men gathered. You don't have a men, if you don't have a gathering of men, of a minion of men, a representative body of the Jewish people of men, then you don't have the women's obligation either, and then you couldn't include a slave. He goes on to say also that there's good reason to argue that women are only obligated in shmia, in hearing Zachar be read. Now he's going to get to this because, and we're going to get to it in a little bit, because there's a debate, not a debate, but there's a disagreement. The Bahag seem to have held that when it came to reading the Megillah for Purim, we say that women are obligated in the midst of Megillah, because they were part of the miracle, because Chazal established it that way, but the Bahag assumed that their obligation wasn't to read the Megillah, their obligation was to hear the Megillah. And he thinks, therefore, that if women are on their own and reading a Megillah from this, they wouldn't make the bracha of Al Mikra Megillah, they would make a bracha of Lishmoa or Al Shmata Megillah, they would make a bracha on hearing the Megillah. So if they're only there to hear it, then if you need a minion, the minion has to be people who are obligated to read it. Now, this becomes an interesting question to think about in other contexts, you know, especially today when people try to talk about what ceremonies possibly could you have women count for a minion towards which count for a minion. So with Megillah, it's not clear that you need a minion to read it at all. But a teacher of mine, Joel Walowski, wrote an article once about having women for Sheva Brachos. Having women make Sheva Brachos, or be there for Sheva Brachos, or count for the minion for Sheva Brachos. So all those kinds of interesting questions. So right here, the Tzitzit Kodesh is saying that anytime you have something that has to be read in public or done in public, for there you're going to need a public of people who are obligated in the actual reading of it, and that would be the 10 men, even if women are obligated in hearing it, that would be hearing rather than reading. If so, the Rush doesn't prove anything, because the Rush could agree that women are obligated to hear Zachar, and yet Rabbi Eliezer would have needed to free that slave. Then Zosher points out that the Binyan Tzion had a similar discussion, and he made a different point. He said that to the extent that we hold that Zachar has to be read from a Sefer Torah in front of a minion, which, as I said before, is a Tosafist tradition, but it's not the only tradition, but it's one we follow because why not? So then you can't read a Sefer Torah with fewer than 10, because you need the Pasuk of Minikdashti B'tok B'nei Yisrael, I will be sanctified among the Jewish people, and that requires 10 men, says the Binyan Tzion. And for that, slaves can't be included, because even though they might be obligated in this practice, in this issue, in this mitzvah, they don't count for a minyan anyway. That's a whole other claim, right? Which gets back to the Sheva Brachos claim as well, which would be that you could claim, the Binyan Tzion seems to be claiming, that even if we were to say that slaves were fully obligated, even if we were to say that women were fully obligated in reading Zachar, but once we hold that Zohar is something that's being read in public as a public Torah reading, that requires 10 men to be there, because the Hashlim, he writes, Hashlim Eidah Kedoshak. To make, and I think what he means, I think what he would have meant, or how he would have said it today in our different times, I think he would have said that the public representation of the Jewish people, something that happens with men and not with women, that has to do with public-private issues and whatever, but that's the way the Torah set it up. So you need to have an Eidah Kedoshak, you need to have a minion there, and that minion can only be constituted by men. And that doesn't depend, as I've heard many people say in our times, the Binyan Tzion was already saying back then, it doesn't depend on whether people are obligated in something. In other words, it's not that women don't make up a minyan because they're not obligated in these practices, because then the response would be, well, all those practices in which they are obligated, maybe they should count for the minyan towards. The Binyan Tzion already back then is saying, outside of the context of any radical changes in women's role in society, he was saying, no, that's not what's going on. There's obligation in mitzvos, and then there's the constitution of a minyan. And the constitution of a minyan is a representative public body of the Jewish people, and for that, he understands to mean that we need men rather than women. Then he points out the Marcheshet, it's another important Achron, had gone through these issues, and he had started from the question of whether women are obligated to read Megillah or not, and he had suggested the obligation of women to say Zachar is parallel to the discussion between the Rambam and the Bahag that I mentioned before about Megillah. The Rambam seems to think that women can be motzi men in the reading of Megillah, that women can read the Megillah and men can hear and fulfill their obligation, and the Bahag doesn't think so, for the reason that we said before, because Mark thinks that their obligation is at a lower level. And he thinks that exactly tracks onto the obligation in Zachor. Not that the Rambam would think the women are fully obligated in Zachor. This is what the Marcheshes was saying. And the Mark thinks not. And then we find that the Shulchan Aruch passes like the Rambam. That the Rambam writes, if a deaf mute or a minor or a shote or somebody who's not in their right mind halachically qualifies as insane, reads the Megillah, reads Zohar, then you're not Yotze. So the Magen Mishnah inferred from that women can do it. I think this is about Megillah in particular. And then the Magen Mishnah adds on, but there are those people who say that women can't be Motzi men. Sorry, the Shulchan Aruch adds on, but there are those who say that women can't be Motzi men. Except that, as I've mentioned on other occasions, there are principles for how we understand what the Shulchan Aruch himself meant for us to understand. And the general principle is that when he mentions an opinion, and then he mentions a second opinion as a Yesh Omrim, as some say, the general understanding is that Yesh Omrim is not the way that the Shulchan Aruch thinks we should paskin. He thinks we should paskin the version of... the version of that he gave us, Stam, which would imply that the Shulchan Aruch too thinks that women can be Motzi men in Mikra Megillah, and that would seem to imply that they can also hear Zachor. They're also required to hear Zachor. And even the truth is, even those who hold that women can't be Motzi men, that's a might be a side issue. That might doesn't necessarily reflect on whether they're obligated or not. Think about the Bahag. The Bahag could theoretically hold, if you're not in the Marcheshes, he could hold that women should hear Zachor, just not say Zachor, just not read Zachor because of whatever issues come up there. So we're going, and that's how he, the Tzitzeliezer, understands Yerach HaShulchan. So there's a little bit more to the responsum, but I want to just look at the Shulchan Aruch and the Aruch HaShulchan, so you hear the language of it, you hear what he's saying. The Shulchan Aruch says, this is in Aruch Chaim, Tof Reish, Pei Tet, Sif Bet, Achad HaKorei V'Achad HaShomei Min HaKorei, you fulfill the Megillah by reading it, or by hearing it from somebody who read it, as long as you hear from somebody who's obligated to read it. And therefore, and then he says, like we said before, those who, if you have a deaf mute or a minor, or somebody who's out of their mind, or not in their right minds, or somebody who's unfortunately halakhically insane, so you're not being Yotze. Then he writes, and then some people say, women aren't Motzi men, women can't fulfill, help men fulfill their obligation by reading it for them. So that's, some say, as I was pointing out, that's an additional, the implication of the first half of the sentence was that women are obligated, because when he came to tell you who's not obligated, he said deaf, mute, minor, and somebody not in their right mind. He didn't say women. That would imply that women are obligated at a level that they're able to read the Megillah for men, and then some say not. Then in the Haggadah, the Rambam writes, V'yesh Omrim, Yimayisha Korit, B'atzma Mevarech Lishmo Megillah. But some, he quotes the Bahag's idea, and this is why at least Ashkenazim have a great challenge in women reading it for men, because he says that women read it, they would read it for herself. She can obviously do it, because she reads it for herself, she's hearing it too. So, but the point is the hearing, and therefore she makes the bracha of Lishmoa, of hearing, not of reading. The Aruch HaShulchan, commenting on that section of the Shulchan Aruch, says, it would seem like they should be. He says, it's a Kavod HaTzibur issue. What the meaning of the words Kavod HaTzibur is a whole topic of its own. We today, people like to say, Kavod HaTzibur means the dignity of the Tzibur. They get all offended by it and say, how can it be less dignity for women to read it? I think that if you look up where Kavod HaTzibur is discussed in Halacha, that's not what it means. And here, it would not be what it means. So here, for example, if her obligation is to hear it, rather than to read it, or even if it's to read it, but anyway, as long as discussion of its own, what the Kavod HaTzibur means. But in any case, and then she couldn't even do it for an individual, because so you'd say, if it's a Kavod HaTzibur issue, then you'd imagine to yourself, well, if she's reading for a private single man, that should be okay. But the Magen Avraham says, no, we don't make those kinds of distinctions. But then the Aruch HaShulchan notes the Ramah about Lishmoa, which would mean then that she's not obligated in the Kriya, and that could change things. Now back, but this is what the Aruch HaShulchan really wants to say. Well, the real issue is, I don't understand it, because why are they obligated in Shmiya and not Kriya? Why would that be the way it is? He says, I think the Bahag thinks that the reasoning of the Gemara, they were also part of the miracle. That's the reason the Gemara gives, because usually, again, as we've said, usually women are not obligated in Mitzvot Seishas Man Gram, and obligations that have a time component. And Purim certainly has a time component. It happens only once a year on the 14th of Adar or the 15th of Adar. So if you hold that way, then why aren't our women included? The answer is because Afeli Yubotone. So what that means is a Maklok of Yishonim, what it means they were part of the miracle, they were also saved, or it means they were instrumental to the miracle. That's another opinion of the Yishonim, but the Aruch HaShulchan says that can't be enough to make them completely obligated the same way as a man. but they can help other women fulfill obligations because they're all women are obligated at the same level. So therefore, yeah, so that's the Aruch HaShulchan's point. He thinks that it's the Bahag that's at play, and he thinks that the whole issue of women being obligated must be at a lower level because they're only included because of Afhan Ayubot Anes, and therefore it's possible they're at the exact same level, and that's what he thinks. So he doesn't really think it's a covenant Tzibur issue. He thinks that it's a level of obligations issue. So that's what, those were the sources to which the Tzitzliezer was referring. But Tzak HaKol, coming back to Tzitzliezer, we see that there's no reason to say that women are definitely not obligated, definitely can't. So if women now have developed the practice, this is what he's talking about when he's referring to this man. Remember, the tshuva that we started with was a tshuva where the Torah Chesed said, why are you getting on women's cases for not coming? The practice of women don't come. Leave them alone. They're not coming. That's our custom. We think they're not obligated. But Tzitzliezer is referring to a guy the exact opposite way. And he's saying, if you see, look at their practice to come, we see that there's no reason why they shouldn't come. There's no bad thing about them coming. And if they feel like they want to come and they feel like they're obligated and they make all these efforts and they're, you know, if they're young women, their fathers, if they're married women, their husbands are encouraging them to become part of shul and go here for zachar, leave them alone. And that's the fundamental end of the tshuva of the response to the Ezer, right? He is showing us that over the course of, you know, 130, 100, 120 years, there's a complete reversal from women not going and some guy, some rabbi type trying to say, oh, they got to go, it's so terrible, and they're wrong. And the meshiv, the Torah Chesed saying, leave them alone and be fine with them. To the other way around, somebody knows that women are making all these efforts to go, and he's saying, oh, they shouldn't go, we have no reason to think they're obligated. And this is basically saying, leave them alone, they want to go, there's enough room for them to go. Now, I think if we look at some of the sources, and I only have a couple of minutes, I firmly intend not to go over it all today, because it's me talking enough to the Ezra anymore, but I would like to point out, the Rambam of the Perush Mishnayos Kiddushin, when he talks about the issue of mitzvot aseh shel zman grama, that principle, that rule, that whether obligations with a time component, so he says it's not an absolute rule. He actually says, we have a rule that we don't follow rules, you know, firmly, that we break rules. So it's funny because that assumes it's like an oxymoronic a little bit. So he says, it's true, women are generally not obligated in time-related mitzvot, but they're also not obligated in the war against Amalek, he says, and that has no time component to it. So that's an example the other way. It's not only time-related mitzvot that they're obligated in. Now, we said in the course of the tshuva of the Tzitzliezer that their opinion would say, no, it's a public war, they'd have to be involved with it, because in general, we say about mechamot mitzvah that they're obligated to be part of it. The Rambam seems to be assuming that they're not obligated. So too, in the Sefer HaMitzvot, he has two mitzvot right next to each other. One is to wipe out Amalek, and the second one is to remember what Amalek did. So in the mitzvah of Mechamot Amalek, he says, it's true, it's a Mechamot Amalek, it's a Mechamot Mitzvah, it's a mitzvah, one of those wars that are completely obligatory upon the Jewish people. And then when he describes the mitzvah to remember what Amalek did, he says the mitzvah is that they came to, and there's a whole discussion that we won't get into, but they started off fighting against us. They're the first nation that went to fight against us. And therefore, he says, at all times, when we have to arouse our feelings, the translation into Hebrew, let's remember, he wrote the Perush Mishnayos in Arabic, we have to remind ourselves with words to want to fight with them. We should encourage and find ways to get the people to hate Amalek. Now, I think that I bring this up, and as I said, this is a thing that I think about a lot. I think that today, people hear Zohar read, but they completely forget the Rambam's categorization of the mitzvah, which is that the reading of Zohar is supposed to leave us with feelings of hatred enough that if we encounter it, at least as a national unit, if we as a national unit encountered Amalek, at least as a national unit, but probably individuals from Amalek, and they were Amalekites, and they really were still attached to being Amalekites, we should hate them because of what they did to us. It would be, and you know, I don't want to make fall into the trap of always sending to Nazis, which is a beautiful example that we can still relate to. If we met today people who are actual Nazis, meaning actual Nazis, and there are people who claim to be Nazis, and maybe they count and maybe they don't, but let's make it even more stark, right? Actual Nazis, people who today say, I am an adherent of Adolf Hitler, Yimach Shemov Zichro, they don't say that, I'm saying that, and I would, if I could, join his army again, and I would, if I could, put Jews in concentration with this. We're supposed to have in ourselves such hatred of them that we would respond to them in an appropriate way. So the Rambam says that's the mitzvah of Zachar. But if that's the mitzvah, then it would seem clear that only those obligated in the wiping out in the war should be included in the obligation also to remember. So that's a little, so that would seem to say, go the other way, that they're not included. And so too, the Sefer HaChinuch, when it comes to the mitzvah, he says, we have to remember what Amalek did. He quotes a little bit of the Rambam, and he gets to all of that, and I'm just going to skip to the end. He says, Bizcharim, it applies to men because they make war and they're the ones who take vengeance on the enemy and not the women. So that's very clear that women are not included. Remember, nobody said it clearly in the poskim, but the Sefer HaChinuch is very clear. Minchas Chinuch right there is not so clear. Says, I don't understand why women aren't included. They're not included in the war, it's true, but it's an obligation with no time component. So what's that they're not going to get the war? But it's a Milchamot Mitzvah in our general principle, Milchamot Mitzvah, with obligatory wars that everybody goes out. It's true, women don't fight, but they go out. So I think the Sefer HaChinuch would say, but once they're not fighting, they don't need the same level of enmity. But others suggest, and I think I saw somebody, I think it might be a Marsha, it's not on the page in front of me anymore, who said that maybe they need that enmity as well so they can properly encourage the men who are going to war to fight the war with the right assiduousness. You can mention the same thing about so that they approach the task or the opportunity to serve, you know, to be the one to take care of the needs of the army, of the food needs and the supply needs of the army. That's what they're going to do when they go out to help in this obligatory war. You can imagine you want them doing it with the same enthusiasm stemming from their recognition of the evil that they're facing. So in any case, our response of the day, with thanks to the OU, Rabbi Jacob Bromwich, David Hochhauser, was about whether women are obligated in the hearing of or the reading of Parshat Zachar. It's not completely clear either way. There are those who exempt them and those who obligate them, and therefore there's plenty of room to say whatever women choose to do, that's fine. They choose to hear it, fine. They choose not to hear it, that's fine, because it's not at all clear whether this is an independent obligation with no time component or it's attached to the war issue. And even if it's attached to the war issue, if women are or aren't included in that. That is a responsible day for the 12th day of Adar. Thank you for joining me, and have a great day.